For Anne and Kate and Lucy. We must make our choice. We may have democracy, or we may have wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both. Louis Brandeis. The crisis consists precisely in the fact that the old is dying and the new cannot be born. In this interregnum, a great variety of morbid symptoms appear. Antonio Gramsci. Strategic inflection points can mean an opportunity to rise to new heights, but it may just as likely signal the beginning of the end. Andy Grove. Introduction. When you reach your 50s, it gets easier to notice the big ways in which the world has or hasn't changed since you were young, both the look and feel of things and people's understandings of how society works. A half century of life is enough to provide some panoramic perspective, letting you see and sense arcs of history firsthand, like when an airplane reaches the altitude where the curvature of the earth becomes visible. Some of the arcs of historical change are obvious, their paths as well as their causes. The equality and empowerment of women is one of those big duh ones. But other important historical arcs, more complicated or obscure, have to be figured out. That's how I came to write my last nonfiction book, a not-so-obvious American history called Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire. I'd noticed that in so many ways, as Stephen Colbert joked on his first episode of his old nightly show, America had become increasingly divided between those who think with their head and those who know with their heart. From the 1960s and 70s on, I realized, America had really changed in this regard. Belief in every sort of make-believe had spun out of control, in religion, science, politics, and lifestyle, all of them merging with entertainment in what I called the fantasy industrial complex. In that book, I explained the deep, centuries-long history of this American knack for creating and believing the excitingly untrue. As soon as I finished writing Fantasyland, we elected a president who was its single most florid and consequential expression ever, a poster boy embodying all its themes. But that long-standing, chronic American condition that turned into an acute crisis is just half the story of how and why we've come to grief these last few decades. The other part concerns the transformation of our social system that started in the 1970s and 80s, helped along by a simultaneous plunge into compulsive nostalgia and wariness of the new and unfamiliar. Whereas Fantasyland concerned Americans' centuries-old weakness for the untrue and irrational and its spontaneous and dangerous flowering since the 1960s, Evil Geniuses chronicles the quite deliberate re-engineering of our economy and society since the 1960s by a highly rational confederacy of the rich, the right, and big business. From my parents' young adulthood in the 1930s and 40s through my young adulthood in the 1970s, American economic life became a lot more fair and democratic and secure than it had been when my parents were children in the 1920s and early 30s. But then, all of a sudden, around 1980, that progress slowed, stopped, and in many ways reversed. I didn't start fully appreciating and understanding the nature and enormity of that change until the turn of this century, after the country had been transformed. In 2002, when several spectacular corporate financial frauds were exposed and their CEO perpetrators prosecuted, I published a long screed in the New York Times blaming Wall Street. "If infectious greed is the virus, New York is the center of the outbreak," I wrote, because it is also, inarguably, the money center of America and the world, the capital of capitalism. It was New York investment bankers who drove the mergers and acquisitions deal culture of the 80s and 90s and who most aggressively oversold the myth of synergy that justified it. It was they who invented the novel financial architectures of Enron and WorldCom. It was the example of New York investment bankers earning gigantic salaries for doing essentially nothing, knowing the right people, talking smoothly, showing up at closings, that encouraged business people out in the rest of America to feel entitled to smoke and mirrors cash bonanzas of their own. A few years later, one very cold morning just after Thanksgiving, I had another slow road to Damascus moment from whatever I had been, complacent neoliberal, to whatever I was becoming, appalled social democrat.